It's the Gadget Grill on... It's... You're turning it up, aren't you?
No.
It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ. My name is Lee Stark, and I'll be serving up the finest in whatever menu we have to offer. That sounds a little bit better now.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you turn things down.
Yeah. Welcome to... The first Gadget Grill for February. I'm Lee Stark, and all across from me is Gary Stark.
That would be me. Good evening. Welcome to the Gadget Grill here on 2RDJ FM 88.1.
It's a gadget-packed Gadget Grill.
It is certainly a gadget-packed Gadget Grill. We have got a studio littered with toys. Absolutely littered. How have you been this week, Lee?
I've been okay. It's been hot this week. I'm trying to survive the weather, trying to find a USB air conditioner, USB tie I can wear.
You did not bring any gadgets with you that could cool us down, did you?
No.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
In fact, I think I brought things that could actually heat us up more than anything else.
One of them certainly turns up the heat, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, tonight on the Gadget Grill, we're talking about portable applications. You know, the idea that you don't have to bring your laptop with you. All you have to do is bring a USB key.
Yes.
And we'll talk about how these things work and why they're so useful.
Good idea.
Yeah, we also got some news. I'm sure there's some news.
There must be some news. I didn't find a whole lot this week. It's been a quiet week this week, everybody getting back to work and with Australia Day and everything.
I know. Well, most people were trying to avoid going back to work.
Well, with the heat, I think that the heat has basically stopped all the news for some reason.
I think I actually had more review products in this week than I've had in a long time, and I didn't have a lot of news.
Well, that's been the hiatus after the Christmas break. Everybody's back, and there's all these new toys that everybody wants you to play with.
Especially after CES, yeah.
So
we've got some news. We've also got a giveaway starting tonight on the show.
Excellent. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. We've got sales monkeys working overtime to find stuff to give to all four listeners that we have.
We've got four now, haven't we?
We've got four. We've gone up in the world. We've got four.
Oh, let me see what
don't
I check. Can...
Don't spoil don't the check. Illusion. Don't
I can tell you that there are at least two internet listeners.
No, don't spoil the illusion.
What illusion?
Yeah.
And I'm realistic.
You're realistic. We're going to review a couple things as well if we get time. Dad has at least one thing that he'd like to review, and I've got at least one thing I'd like to review, and I've got this big thing I'd like to tell you about.
Boasting again.
Boasting. Always. I'm a gadget reviewer. I can't not boast, can I?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you're not talking about... Okay.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. But before that, we should probably get into something to play. So this is Incubus with Anna Molly. It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ. My name is Lee Stark, and if you want to catch...
My name is not Lee Stark.
Your name is not Lee Stark. His name is Gary Stark. There is a relation there. Don't ask. You probably don't want to know. And if you want to find out about anything we're talking about on the show tonight, you can look us up at www.gadgetgrill.com.au. And if you want to listen to the show on the World Wide Web, you can head to www.radio2rdj.com.
Yes, you can. We've got news coming up now. What have you got in the way of news, Lee?
Well, I'm going to start with this new type of paint that's been invented in Japan. The people at the University of Tokyo have come up with a type of paint that, using an aluminium iron oxide,
aluminium oxide. It wouldn't be aluminium iron.
No,
oxide.
It's actually aluminium iron oxide. Don't try to correct me on this one. I'm reading the story.
That's
not
interesting.
You.
That's interesting.
It's an aluminium iron oxide, and because of it's resonating at the same frequencies used in Wi-Fi. And as a result, you paint this on the walls of your home, and it blocks Wi-Fi signals from being sent from those walls of your home.
Or sent through them, rather. It would convert your home into a Faraday cage, which is a very, very interesting technology.
And a very useful way for houses and businesses to actually stop, the whole Wi-Fi security issue.
Yeah. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I can tell Peter's fascinated by that because he has darted out of the other studio to go and get something.
He's going to get a bucket of paint to paint the entire office with so no one can steal 2RDJ's Wi-Fi.
That's what it must be, yeah.
Don't even try. We've got the security jacked up all the way.
That's a very interesting technology. On the subject of security, as you know, Google won't let you, or they try and do their best to try and protect you to going to from going to malware sites, sites that they believe are malware.
That's right. You can hit the X if you want to get rid of them in that whole Google search thing lately.
Yeah, but they had a minor problem on their servers earlier this morning, it was, and no matter which website that you Googled, it told you that the site was dangerous and potentially malware. The whole lot. They had some sort of a glitch.
Wait. So you're telling me not only was my site malware, which it probably is, you're telling me that Radio 2RDJ and the Gadget Grills website was malware?
No, I'm telling you that everything was being reported by Google as malware.
Wow. They've got to warn you the web is just that dangerous.
I know. You've got to be careful. You can't... Well, you know you can believe anything that you read on the web, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw it on the web. It must be true. It
must absolutely be true. I've got a new one about the new JPEG standard coming out this year.
As opposed to the old one. Well, tell us the difference.
The old one's been around for a long time. I mean, most people don't realize just how bad JPEG is. JPEG is that file format all your cameras practically shoot in. Everything you save is usually either in JPEG. Web is PNG, but that's for transparencies. It's like a replacement for GIF. JPEG XR is the new version. And it's more like a combination of RAW, which is the image files that a lot of high-definition cameras produce, and JPEG. And it actually allows you to apply the same sort of RAW exposure technology, which means you can change the lightness and darkness and contrast levels in a JPEG format. Plus, a lot of things people don't realize about JPEG is that every time you open it up, in whatever you are, Mac, Windows, Photoshop, take your pick.
Well, it's not the opening that's the problem. It's actually the saving.
It's the closing that's the problem, actually.
Every time you save it, it recompresses the file and you lose information.
And this happens whether you're opening it up in iPhoto or Windows Photo Viewer. It's when you close the file down, Windows or iPhoto, in each of those cases, is just resaving and recompressing information. So your image gets worse and worse over time. Well, JPEG XR doesn't quite do that because it actually allows for 16 bits of data to be encoded in it, as opposed to an 8-bit original JPEG process.
So it's still going to have the same problem, but it's going to take longer to manifest itself.
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, being that it supports high-definition images now, it's supposed to be fine. But they're saying at its highest quality level, highest quality setting, it loses no information from compression.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's going to be very interesting to see that.
It's probably going to take ages to find its way into cameras, to be honest.
Well, yeah, we don't care about finding its way into cameras because on a camera you've always got RAW, and RAW, of course, is the best way if you don't want to lose data.
But not for these point-and-shoot cameras that people have. Speaking of point-and-shoot cameras, you've got a story.
I've got a story, but it's nothing to do with point-and-shoot cameras.
Well, I thought it did.
No, the in-flight texting.
Oh, well, that's not the story I was thinking of. That would have been so much a better segue had you gone to the story I was telling you to go to.
Which one?
The gigapixel.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
of course. Sorry.
Go to that.
Okay, yeah, I'm getting old. Yes, thanks. At the inauguration of Barack Obama last week, one photographer went out there with this gigapixel. It's basically a stand that you put your point and shoot camera on, and you program into it where you want to start your photo, where you want to end your photo. And it's a panoramic head, a motorized electronic panoramic head that automatically calculates all the different photos that it needs to take. When you build up a panoramic photo, you basically take a lot of photos going across and down a scene, and you can get a lot more detail into a photo than you can just using ordinary techniques. This does all the mathematics for you and does it using... just a little battery-powered device that you just put on a tripod. It looks very interesting, and the price is only $380. I think that's a remarkable value for that.
So it should cost around here like $4,000.
Something like that. Yeah, the way these things go. Yeah. I think we should try and speak to the dealers and try and get one of these. Speak to the distributor.
If there's a dealer in Australia who really wants to have a solid review of this and get a video review of how this works on the website, we're more than happy to take it and show people just how it works.
We've got to find out who it is that's distributing.
If anyone's doing it.
Yep. The other news item that I had that I was going to go to was, of course, British Airways. Last week you were talking about sexting.
Yeah.
On the Airbus.
No one sexted me this week. I'm very disappointed.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Ew. That's illegal, I think, except in Tasmania.
Yeah, in Tasmania it's compulsory.
Go on.
On the new Airbus A380, British Airways are going to allow texting in flight, which is going to be interesting. So you can send naughty messages to that cute little teenager sitting in the next aisle.
Which is a much better idea than, say, making phone calls on the flight. Making phone calls would really annoy the hell out of me. But at least with this texting, all you have to do is deal with the little noises.
Yeah.
And it's
well,
done.
It depends on the sort of family you get, because some of them you can turn on the beeping on your keys and you can really annoy the person sitting next to you.
Yeah, and they can just stick their headphones on and not worry about it. I guess if you're flying a British Airways flight, you'll probably get a whole bunch of really swanky headphones anyway.
Well, it's got to be better than the food.
Yeah, much better.
there's a horrible thought.
What, serving up headphones as food?
No. You got to remember the sort of cuisine that the British are famous for.
What, and, bad?
And now translate that to airline food.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I've got one about Microsoft here.
Oh, dear.
Have people been playing with Windows 7? We told you last week and the week before that to play with Windows 7.
Yes.
Microsoft have now confirmed to us this week that there are no more Windows 7 beta releases publicly coming out.
So if you didn't already get it...
Well, you've got till February 10.
Otherwise... Too late.
Otherwise too late, but that technically also means that the final release of Windows 7 is likely going to be coming a lot sooner than Microsoft originally hinted at. They were saying originally Windows 7 was 2010 release, and that means to most developers and manufacturers...
2023.
Yeah, well, no, that means to most manufacturers it would be arriving around September, October. But if they're saying no more public betas, that means the final release candidate of this Windows 7, which is great... Might be pointing at
around
July.
About, I'd be saying the release candidate for beta would be April with a June or July release date.
I'm seeing a milestone release at July for final release.
Excellent.
Which is really cool. I've got this one other really cool. Well, I've got two other news pieces. I'll just mention the 16:9 quickly.
Yep.
The most people see widescreens at home. Your TVs are all 16:9 ratio, which is what we see. Actually, they're 16:10 ratio, which is what a lot of computer monitors are. That's close to the 16:9 ratio that we think of for cinema.
Right.
You know, when you watch a movie, it's this 16:9 long ratio. Well, Philips have come out and said, no, we're actually all wrong. It's 21:9, and they're technically right about that. It's this extremely wide panoramic screen, which Americans unfortunately won't be getting, but Philips in Australia look like they'll be bringing out here.
Excellent.
And they'll be bringing out in Europe and Asia, hopefully, as well. And it is an incredibly wide screen that, you know how you've always seen those black bars on the top of your new LCD plasma or projector?
They're going to be even deeper.
They're not even going to exist.
It depends on your screen.
Yeah.
If you've got an ordinary 4:3 ratio screen.
Can you imagine watching a 4:3 video on a 21:9, this tiny postage stamp box in the middle
of
the
screen? Can you imagine
watching
a 21:9 video on a 4:3 screen?
Oh, God, it wouldn't even work.
It'd be just a bloody slit.
Postage stamp slit.
It's the slit in the mailbox that you put your envelope into.
The other thing I'd like to comment, there are two Apple things coming out this week. One is that there's a hint towards new iMacs because no one can actually buy new iMacs or get the new ones in. So in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a new iMac. You can bet on it. The other thing is, there's always Apple news every week. This seems to be the common frequency. We always have at least one element of Apple news.
And at least a couple of Microsoft stories, too.
Yeah, it's a good backwards-forwards thing we have. Apple have this week decided to issue or put a patent forward for multi-touch. Now, this is that thing that they have on their iPod Touch, and this is targeted directly, from what we can tell, at Palm's new device, the Palm Pre, which looks like the first real solid competitor to the iPhone. It's got a very similar design, very similar interface. It's got a keyboard underneath, a QWERTY-based keyboard, very similar to the Palm Trio and all the other Palm-based devices.
Right.
And it's a really solid, it's a really good device. I think there's not a single gadget reviewer out there, a tech reviewer, IT journal, that doesn't want to play with this.
Interesting. The other thing on Apple-related stories is I've noticed that a couple of the phone plan sellers are out of stock at the moment of iPhones.
Yeah, this is interesting as well. This is hinting towards a new new iPhone. It's not just that.
That was the thought behind my mentioning it.
Yeah, there's a new iPhone firmware release this week, and inside the code for the iPhone, have you not heard of this?
I've not heard of this yet.
Then inside the code of the new iPhone firmware release is a little bit of code that is looking at a new iPhone model entirely. And how we know this is that previously with the first iPhone, the 2G, which is the one both my dad and myself have, and the iPhone 3G, they were called 1.1 and 1.2. I think that's what they were. Well, this new one looks at a new device called 2.1. And we know that the people making the chips for the iPhone have been working on a brand new chip design. And we know that they're working on, or Apple are potentially working on, the possibility of an iPhone Nano and a new iPhone with possibly A2DP, so the Bluetooth stereo built in. Yeah, it's looking like... I know what that was. That was my iPhone vibrating slightly.
Ah.
Yeah, we're looking at the concept of a brand new iPhone in the
not too distant future,
and we're not just talking about a brand new iPhone and a brand new shell. Yay, let's get one in the pink and red shell. This is a serious piece of technology.
This is a little bit earlier than I expected, because Apple often make announcements on April 1st, don't they?
Yeah, the beginning of April is usually a great time for Apple to make. Or it could be June, like a Macworld the Mac Developers Conference. Yeah.
This is a little bit early for that, but anyway.
It's hinting towards it. I imagine they've still got loads of stock, because we're now seeing the off-contract stuff, the prepaid. You can now buy... An iPhone back again on an Optus
prepaid.
On Optus prepaid, yeah. So that's back. Yes. I imagine it's going to really propagate itself forward in the other carriers. But yeah, we should probably play some news. Play some music.
How about we play some music? What do we got?
I think we've got May. And this time is the last time that we'll actually play this song. Save yourself, 'cause the only thing that matters that you get away from the pain. Check this out!
You've been working hard all morning and now it's time to relax for lunch. What better place than with your pals in the shed? And what better shed than the one right here on Tuesdays on 2RDJ between 1 and 3?
So please come and join Peter Worthington, that was him, and me, Gary Stark. We're your pals in the shed on 2RDJ FM 88.1.
And don't forget your lunch.
Radio 2RDJ 88.1. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark.
Somewhere.
And right now we're going to take a look at our feature tonight, Portable Applications. Portable Applications. Well, this is a fairly new thing. Do you want to turn that down a bit?
No.
Okay. Turn it down anyway. There you go. We're going to look at portable applications. Now, this is a fairly new thing. It's been out for a couple of years, but most people aren't aware of it. And the idea behind portable apps is exactly what it sounds like. Storing an application on a portable drive, like a USB stick, a 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, 8 gig, 16, 32, take your pick, there are loads. You can do it on a 64 meg if you want. And the idea is pretty simple. You store programs that have been shrunk down and designed to fit on these sticks. They fit actually what's under, usually, a portable operating system. It's a little tiny shell that portableapps.com creates and allows you to basically take your information with you. Now, what I mean by this is that, say you're going overseas and you don't want to bring a laptop. Well, what you can do is grab a USB stick, install these applications on it, and by applications, we're talking things like Thunderbird, Mozilla Thunderbird for your email, that's your Outlook replacement.
Yep.
Mozilla Firefox is a web browser. OpenOffice, the thing we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, you can actually bring a writing application with you. You can even bring a version of VLC or MPlayer and play your movies, music. There's even a password protecting application on it.
So you can keep all your passwords on there, and you can on any computer that you happen to be using. And this could be a computer that perhaps you're in an internet cafe. You're sitting in an internet cafe in Pisa in Italy because you're touring the world.
And you didn't want to bring a laptop with you, or you didn't have one.
You didn't have one, that's right. You just plug this into the computer there, and everything will just come up on the screen there. On your portable apps, you go and you know the applications, you use it. All your documents are there as well, of course.
Yep.
And... that sounds very useful.
The interesting part about this is that if you go to a lot of internet cafes, I'm not saying which ones do this, but quite a lot actually keep keyloggers running on them to see what their people are using. They monitor what's going on their internet cafe computers.
Let's stop right there for a moment, because I think I'm not sure that our listener would know what a keylogger is.
Okay, a keylogger is exactly what it's... Yeah, a listener, thank you. A keylogger is exactly what it sounds like. It's a little application that sits behind your computer, basically. It sits in resident memory and logs everything you're typing, logs... We're not just talking keylogging specifically, but also logs what sort of programs you're using at the time and sends it to the admin of the network.
So in other words, every time you touch the keyboard, you type in a character, be it your document or perhaps your username and password. It is recording that somewhere and sending it to someone. Of course, that is also part of one of the problems behind malware applications. And people who are less than reputable try and install these on your computer without your knowledge. And you're using your computer, you log into your banking site, and suddenly somebody has got your user ID and your password.
You've lost $2,000.
And you've lost all your money in your account. Yeah, that sounds pretty useful to me.
Now, why we're talking about this is because if you've used your portable applications before, say you've set it up at home, then you've likely set up portable Firefox with all your passwords to automatically log into websites. So when you go to these websites, say an internet cafe in Pisa, it automatically knows what it is and logs you in.
Without you touching the keyboard.
Exactly, and that's the important thing to note. You're not actually sharing your details. You're sharing them over the network. There's nothing can be done to stop that. But you're not actually having to retype it back in again.
If everything's done correctly, then it should be sent via a secure connection and nobody... Well, it's very difficult. I'm not going to say nobody can intercept it, but it makes it that much more difficult for people to intercept and get access to that data.
So if you're looking for more information on that, head to portableapps.com. Another thing that's becoming pretty common is the idea of thin-stalling something. Now, this is a portable app.
What?
Yeah, thin-stalling it. It's like installing.
Yeah, I'm not feeling well today. I'm feeling a bit thick.
Yeah, it's like installing, but with a th attached to the... Thin-stalling is the process of taking your already installed application and making it portable. Now, in some cases, this means, like, say you're a programmer and you've got a copy of Visual C++,
Visual Studio. .NET. It's only about 7 trillion gigabyte installation.
Yeah. Well, what thin-stall does? It shrinks it to be able to be used on a portable USB stick. Now, the legality of this is so-so. The idea is that if you have a USB stick, and you have a license for this program, you theoretically have the right to do this. And Adobe have even updated their terms conditions recently for the new...
The licensing would actually depend upon the actual product.
Different products have got different licensing,
so you do need to check your product license.
And the reason I say this was because in reading the Creative Studio or Creative Suite license for Adobe, it actually specifies at one point whether you're installing one thing for your desktop or for portable applications. It actually makes it evident. And they're obviously aware at Adobe that people are taking Adobe with them on the go. So if you do have licenses, check your terms, conditions, or email your company to see if it's possible to thin-stall. But if you are looking to thin-stall your stuff, say you would like to take your programs with you on the go, carry them on your USB stick, then certainly the way around that is to thin-stall your stuff using the thin-stall virtualization suite.
Okay, that also raises one other issue, of course.
Mm.
And that is, for instance, that I would not consider, even at any point in time, running something like Adobe Photoshop on something like the netbooks that we have. You've got to be aware of the power on the machines that you're working with.
Interestingly, I've run Photoshop on the Winds we've got.
No, you've walked it on there.
Yeah. No, it's actually pretty good. The downsides of thin-stalling are if you are moving it to something like a netbook, then you have to be well aware that not so much of the netbook's limitations in speed. That's much like that if you move to a really low-end desktop, say something using a Celeron or a low-end AMD chip. That's something you have to be aware of. Rather, on a netbook, you should be aware of your limitations in screen size.
A man's got to know one's limitations.
Your limitations in screen size come up because if you're going to use something like Illustrator, InDesign, or even Photoshop RAW, which are things under the new Creative Suite, you could technically make... portable, from what I understand, if you're only using it under that set, you have to use at least 1024 by 768. And that's not something a screen size of 1024 by 600 on a netbook will allow.
Mine's 1024 by 768.
Yeah, yours is really weird looking.
I know, but I'm using a different driver.
Yeah, yours is weird looking.
But then again, so am I.
So yeah, portable apps is this new way of going on the go with all your stuff. It's cool. I recommend people try it. In fact, I recommend people pay close attention to the competition we've got running at the moment.
Oh, yes. We've got to mention that, haven't we?
We should mention that. We're actually giving away portable apps on USB sticks.
Yes, we have half a dozen of them or so, I believe.
I think we've got a little bit more than that, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we've got a few more than that. We're giving away portable apps preloaded. We're not obviously going to set up your email or anything like that. Portable apps is free, so we're just adding the USB component into it already and installing it for you.
Yep.
And it's a pretty it's simple, but it works.
And how do people enter?
People head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au, and there'll be a win link later on the site. I have to activate it.
Oh, you haven't done it yet.
I haven't activated yet. So by the time this podcast goes up, you'll be able to enter. And you actually have to enter using the entry keyword plus something else. I think the question I put on there was why or what would you use on portable apps. I'll find out after the music break.
Okay.
But you also have to mention an entry keyword, and this week's entry keyword, which will change every week, is milk.
Okay.
So whether you say milk, chocolate milk, strawberry milk, seaweed milk, seaweed milk.
I'm not touching this.
Yeah. Whether you just say some sort of milk, that's just the main entry keyword you need to say, and then you have to tell us what you would, I think it's what you would use it for, or what apps you'd be most likely to use.
And of course, if you've missed the fact that the keyword is milk, then you can always go to the website, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, or rewind back from what you've hit the undo button. I'll come back in a minute with the actual question on that. We're judging actually based off of what the entries are. So this is a game of skill. Tell us what you're going to do. Anyway, we've got a song next, haven't we?
We have John Mayer and
Vultures. It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ. I am Lee Stark, and on the other side over there is
Gary Stark, I guess. That must be me.
Yeah, it must be you. And right now we're going to talk about some reviews, because we don't do reviews enough on the Gadget Grill. You think we should? Can you stop with that order? Do I have to keep reminding you about that every time?
Yes, you do. I keep forgetting.
Jeez. Can you put some, 2-second breaks in there, maybe? That would stop you. I'll give you some 2-second or 5-second MP3s of silence. Would that do it?
I should do that. Yeah.
Right now, we're going to talk. Actually, Dad's going to talk first about a camera we've been reviewing, and the actual review is going to appear on site later on. By the way, we do have the question. The question is, I've lost it again. The question is, what you would use portable apps for? So, if you head to our website, you can actually win a USB key loaded with portable apps. The link is there now. Just head to it. Remember, the entry keyword is milk, and just type in what you would use portable apps for. Anyway,
okay, the camera that we've had for the last week and a bit has been the new Canon EOS 5...
No, it's not EOS. That's just a 5D Mark
II. 5D. It's an EOS.
I guess you call it that. It isn't.
That sounded terrible. You're not supposed to have that in the studio.
Go on.
It's an EOS 5D Mark II. Now, several years ago, Canon brought out an EOS 5D, and it was a good camera in many ways, but I wasn't impressed with it. The ergonomics weren't all that good.
Based off a full-frame sensor.
It had a full-frame sensor. Now, for people who don't understand photography.
Or who missed the first show.
Yeah, full-frame sensor. It's a large sensor. It basically lets you, with a digital camera, shoot images that are ostensibly in your digital negative has the same sort of size, physical size, as a 35mm piece of film. Now, the Mark II is the new version of that. It's 21 megapixels, which is a lot of data to move around and store, but it also is very high resolution and lets you capture very, very highly detailed images if you have a good lens.
Plus, it also lets you capture high-definition video.
It is very good. It captures. It is a video camera as well, so I can use this for movies.
I think to say that we're probably most impressed by this is an understatement. It's a surprising phone, especially for Nikon fanboys that we are.
Well, yeah, I've been using cameras for a long time. I've been into photography for something like 30 years, and through most of that time I've been using Nikons. And to me, this camera is about the second best camera that Canon have ever produced, following on from the late 70s, early 80s. They had a film camera called the A1, which was absolutely a magnificent camera. It was just a legendary camera, and it is still revered by people such as myself.
Which is why I'm buying one soon.
Yeah, it is the one camera that I wish I'd never sold, that I have sold. I wish I still had one. It was that good a camera.
I guess about the only thing for me this lacks is that it has no inbuilt flash. And for a prosumer camera like this, or a very professional camera, not having a flash when it's competing with cameras that do have inbuilt flashes.
I think what Canon have done is they've seen how many people in the pro side of things have been buying this camera as an entry-level pro camera, and so they've eliminated the built-in flash, but the camera's got a lot of nice features to it. It allows you to choose how you want to select the various focus points that you can, and there's a direct entry method to do that using a little joystick-type control on the back of the camera. It is quite fast in terms of focus speed. Focus speed is very, very good. It's a great camera to use. It feels very nice in the hand, feels solid. Great viewfinder, great information.
I'm going to talk briefly about the HTC Touch because I'm putting that on the website later on this week. This is the new 3G version of the HTC Touch. And this is a Pocket PC, Windows Mobile-based phone, which is very lightweight. It has this really nice feeling back to it. It competes with HTC's Touch Diamond and Touch Pro. I actually think it's a lot better. I personally found the operating system was much better progressed than when I played with the HTC Touch last year. It uses a touch-based interface that basically sits on the top of Windows, and in a way this slows it down. This is something that can't be avoided because Windows Mobile isn't exactly the best operating system on the planet. But what you do is you use your thumb, you hold it in your hand, and you guide it along. And they've gotten the speed worked out right. The interface feels really good. The phone actually has good sound out of it. About the only thing that bugs me is that it still uses the USB on the bottom as your means of charging, which is fine, but it also uses the USB as your means of plugging in your headphones. And if you don't have USB headphones, which I don't think really anyone does, too bad. I guess you have to use Bluetooth headphones, but I'm still not convinced that's a great move by HTC. We're going to talk briefly about the other monster thing we've got in the studio at the moment.
Yes, the thing that is that makes the control panel look small.
Yeah, this is the Lenovo ThinkPad W700, and this is a fairly new laptop. It is a beast. We're talking something like 6 gigs of memory, a Core 2 Extreme processor. If you're a computer junkie, you're just wetting yourself right now. It's not just in size. It's a 17-inch laptop screen size, and you've still got the extra bits on the sides. So this makes it around 18 to 19 inches in size in general. To give you an idea, it takes 3 MSI Wins, which are the computers we're using here, to actually fill out the size of this thing. And as an interesting point, it's just an absolute remarkable...
This is not the sort of thing that I would be taking onto a plane with me. I've done a lot of travel in my time, and I've gone from using 15-inch widescreen laptops on planes, and if you're travelling in cattle class, then you've got a problem because the screen, well, you've got no room in cattle class on the plane, and the person in front of you puts their seat back and you can't use your computer. It's totally hopeless. So these days I travel with something, you know, sort of with a 12 or a 13-inch screen or even with something like the netbooks that we have now.
This is
amazing. Too heavy. I
actually don't think it's too heavy. I like the weight. It's the size that's the problem.
I think if you're flying with a couple of our local airlines, yeah, that are a little bit top heavy in terms of how much weight they let you bring on board, this would do your carry-on luggage weight allowance in one fell swoop.
The interesting thing about the W700 is that I couldn't actually find a backpack to put it in. I mean, we've got a backpack called the Turtle, which is what's what we nickname it. It's the Logitech Kinetic 15.4, in case you're curious. And it barely fits in that. When I took it home from work, I had to carry it in a green bag.
That's a green shopping bag.
Yeah, green shopping bag, the irritating green plastic bags. I haven't told you the standout feature of this thing. Not only is it huge and has this amazing graphics power, it's got an NVIDIA Quadro workstation graphics card. It's a workhorse that's sitting underneath it.
So is this one of those new graphics cards that the new version of...
Yeah, this Adobe Photoshop and Premiere both take advantage of this card, yeah.
So that means that if you're doing... This would be a very good photo processing laptop.
This is obviously a workstation laptop because of this one pivotal feature. It has an inbuilt Wacom tablet built into the panel here. And what you get is basically 3 mice in this computer.
Are they blind?
Shut up. You get the little red nib that a lot of Toshibas and Lenovos have come with in
nipple.
The past. Yeah, it's the nipple, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the little red nipple, the membrane, basically. You get the touchpad as well underneath it. And you get the graphics tablet, which has a little pen in the side of the computer. And I've been using it to paint with in a piece of program called ArtRage.
Right.
And it's really good. I'm really happy with it.
Excellent, excellent. We should probably talk about what we're doing next week.
Next week we're talking about Bluetooth.
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 That's when you. You're drinking too much blackberry juice. Your teeth turn blue.
That's when you've bitten inside of a blue tongue wizard.
Oh dear! Oh dear! Oh dear!
We'll talk about Bluetooth technology: the headsets, the A2DP, the Bluetooth speaker systems, all sorts of things. Bluetooth.
And why you should have it in your car for your cell phone?
Why you should have it in a lot of things. I mean, GPS is user. It's beginning to be used by almost everything. I'll even see if I can get on the horn to Sennheiser because they've got some new technology that uses a technology very similar to Bluetooth in a new set of headphones they launched this week. Anyway, have a good week. My name is Lee Stark.
I'm Gary Stark. You've been listening to The Gadget Grill on 2RDJFM 88.1.
For more information, head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au. Have a good week, everyone.
This is Los Hombres Caliente.